So our third presenter is Jamie Forrest, and she is the Epidemiology and Evaluation Administrator with the Bureau of Chronic Disease Prevention at the Florida Department of Health. And she will be talking with us today about the geographic disparities in the prevalence of prediabetes in Florida from the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System.
Good afternoon. I first have to say that I'm presenting this on behalf of my colleague Shamariel Robertson, who wasn't able to be here. So I'll do my best to answer questions. Overview of the presentation will give a little bit of background about prediabetes, looking at the Lifestyle Change Prevention Program, go into just a little bit about our methodology, and share our results and some of the public health implications. So what is prediabetes? If you attended earlier today, there was a rapid fire chronic disease section. We actually had two prediabetes presentations, but I think that there's actually more people in here than there were, so hopefully I'm not too redundant with what I'm sharing. So prediabetes is a condition that precedes the onset of type 2 diabetes. It's characterized by elevated blood levels, blood glucose levels that are not quite high enough to be classified as diabetes. And people with prediabetes are at a higher risk for developing type 2 diabetes as well as heart disease and stroke. According to CDC, approximately 1 in 3 adults have prediabetes, but it's largely undiagnosed. So, for example, in Florida, from our BRFSS, we found that 7.1% of Floridians ages 18 and older reported being diagnosed with prediabetes in 2013. That's about a million. If we're using that one-third estimate, that would mean that there's 4 million adults in Florida that have prediabetes that aren't aware of their condition. There are several risk factors associated with prediabetes from literature, unhealthy weight being the strongest of them, but also things such as family history of diabetes, gestational diabetes, having a live birth to a child over 9 pounds, sedentary lifestyle, high cholesterol, as well as hypertension. There are no clear symptoms for prediabetes, although an individual may show some of the same symptoms of diabetes, such as frequent urination, excessive thirst, vision problems, chronic wounds. And once an individual is diagnosed with prediabetes, they should be tested for type 2 diabetes every 1 to 2 years. So this is a chart kind of showing the different cutoffs and thresholds for normal range versus prediabetes versus diabetes using three different tests. So A1C is a common test that looks at the blood sugar levels over a long period of time. So prediabetes would be in the range of 5.7 to 6.4. Fasting plasma glucose, where an individual fasts overnight and takes their blood first thing in the morning, would be in the range of 100 to 125. And an oral glucose tolerance test is where they administer a glucose drink and have the individual wait for a period of time before testing to see how their body responds. So that would be within the range of 140 to 199 would help indicate prediabetes. So for treatment of prediabetes, lifestyle behavior modifications are really the most successful, although for certain individuals, medications may be prescribed, such as metformin, in addition to the lifestyle change approaches. So it would be for those who are at high risk, those with a BMI over 35, younger than 60, and women with a history of gestational diabetes. Prediabetes will not automatically turn into type 2 diabetes, and early intervention can actually return blood glucose levels to the normal range. Risk for type 2 diabetes can be lowered by up to 58% through lifestyle modifications to lower body weight up to 5 to 7% of body weight and increasing physical activity. So the Diabetes Prevention Lifestyle Change Program is based on the National Diabetes Prevention Program. It's a weight loss and nutrition management program for people with or at risk of prediabetes. It's a year-long session where individuals would meet with a small group that's facilitated by a trained lifestyle coach. They meet weekly for the first portion for 16 sessions, and then for the remainder of the year they meet on a monthly basis. So in this study we looked at using some spatial epidemiology analysis. You know, traditionally we've used ArcGIS and we've used chloropleth maps to look at how diseases are spread across geographical areas. although methods to determine significant disease clusters have not been quite often as used, although based on what I've seen in the last 2 days, it seems like that is rapidly changing. So the two research goals of this study, the first was to investigate the geographical distribution of prediabetes prevalence and to determine clusters by county. And our second objective was to determine associated risk factors of prediabetes. So this is the state of Florida. We have about 19 million residents, 15 million of those being adults, across 67 counties. So for our data sources, we use the 2013 Florida BRFSS. So in Florida, we have a method in place where our counties actually set aside money every year and kind of collect it, and then every third year they push it up to the state level and it goes into our contract with our vendor so that we can do a county level sample. So in 2013, I think we had around 35,000 respondents to our BRFSS. We use the U.S. Census Bureau County Cartographic Boundary Files and the Florida Legislature's Office for Economic and Demographic Research for our population estimates. We used ArcGIS as well as SAS for some different testing, and GEODA, which is a free software to calculate a global Moran's Eye and local Moran's Eye. So going into the first objective, investigating the geographical distribution by county, we mapped the prevalence of prediabetes across the state. Areas with darker are indicating higher prevalence. Overall, the range of prediabetes in Florida ranged from about 4.5 to 12.9%. The stars on the map indicate counties that have a lifestyle change prevention program. It's not necessarily the quantity of programs within those counties. It's just yes or no dichotomous whether they have one or not. Our Bureau is currently working to both increase the number of recognized diabetes prevention lifestyle change programs as well as increasing referrals to these programs through our 1305 efforts. So this map depicts the results of the spatial analysis that we did looking at where we see significant clusters. So a global Moran's Eye was used to determine whether or not significant clusters of disease exist. And the local Moran's Eye, the local test was used to look for spatial autocorrelation between a single county and its neighbors. And so what we found is up in the northeastern corner of Florida, which is right around our Jacksonville area, although a lot of those counties that are shown in dark red are highly rural. There were significant hotspots or significant high prevalence of diabetes burden. And then down in the southeast corner, we found significantly low prevalence of prediabetes. So the second objective was to determine associated risk factors of prediabetes. And looking at our BRFSS data, we found the following risk factors to be significantly associated, and this aligned with what we found in literature: hypertension, obesity, depression, high cholesterol, age, race, ethnicity, and physical activity. And here we're looking at essentially the prevalence. So we can see that with increasing age, the prevalence of prediabetes increases significantly. Hispanics actually had a significantly lower prevalence of prediabetes than non-Hispanic whites and non-Hispanic blacks. We saw with increasing BMI, increasing prevalence of prediabetes as well. And we looked at hypertension, depressive disorder, and high cholesterol. And for all three of those conditions, individuals with those conditions had significantly higher prevalence of prediabetes than without. We conducted an adjusted logistic regression in using stepwise selection to determine which variables to include in the model. And so from those findings, we found that individuals age 65 and older were 1.6 times more likely to have prediabetes than the 18 to 44 counterparts. Non-Hispanic blacks were 1.4 times more likely than non-Hispanic whites. Those who were overweight and obese had increased odds, overweight 1.8 times more likely, and those who were obese 3.4 times more likely. And again, with hypertension and depressive disorder, high cholesterol as well, we saw increased odds of being diagnosed with prediabetes. So So for discussion, we did find that statistically significant hotspots of prediabetes were observed in the eastern panhandle, northeastern corner region of Florida, and statistically significant cold spots were observed in the southern region. Age groups, race and ethnicity, BMI, hypertension, depressive disorder, and cholesterol level were all significantly associated with prediabetes. And we found that adults who are 65 years and older, non-Hispanic, black, overweight, or obese with hypertension, depressive disorder, or high cholesterol level were at a higher risk of having been diagnosed with prediabetes. And one of the standouts was individuals who are obese are 3 times more likely to have a diagnosis of prediabetes. So we know that the epidemic of diabetes poses a challenge to public health officials. The International Diabetes Federation projects that the number of people living with diabetes will increase worldwide from 387 million last year to 592 million in 2035. We know that pharmacotherapy to prevent diabetes can work, but it can have short-lived beneficial effects, and it's not quite as effective as lifestyle modification. So prevention of diabetes with lifestyle modification has maximum benefit and is cost-effective. Some limitations of the study is we did not check for interaction among risk factor variables in this analysis, as well as additional risk factors could have been examined and included in the model. Another limitation is that BRFSS is self-reported, and I think the biggest limitation is probably what I talked about in the beginning, that it's estimated from NHANES, they said 37.5% of the adult population have prediabetes, whereas in Florida we're looking at a prevalence of 7.1. So that the actual diagnosis itself is a limitation, because we're looking at only these individuals who have self-reported. So in conclusion, Florida Department of Health, we can use these county-level GIS cluster maps of prediabetes to help us better understand the burden of prediabetes, or at least the areas where they're getting diagnosed, as well as identify areas and populations with higher risks of prediabetes, and we can use that information to help us strategically guide our prevention and intervention efforts. I'd like to acknowledge Shmeryl Robertson, who, as I mentioned, this was really her study, Zhenwei Jiang, Megan McDonald, and Dr. Agricola Odoy. And I'd be happy to take questions. Yes, Vicki?
I was wondering if you think if you guys investigated, if there's any systematic bias in who gets screened and who gets told that they're pre-diabetic by the physicians, which might even help to explain some of the geographic.
I think that's a really interesting question. I don't know how we would even go about looking at that, but I think it would be...
I mean, I think you'd have to do a follow-up survey of why were you tested, or even to the physician.
Yeah, and actually Sammy Twinko presented an interesting analysis using the diabetes risk assessment test. So there's 7 indicators on that test, I believe, 4 of which are actually additional questions on the BRFSS. So that might be another way that we could dig a little bit deeper into this to see a little bit more about that aspect. Yeah.
I would think that, and I don't know much about, I haven't used BRFSS, but I would think there might be some questions about whether they have a primary care physician and whether they've seen their doctor in the last,
There is a question, yeah.
And certainly most older people are getting screened just by going to see their doctor.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very common test, looking at fasting glucose, and you might be able to tease that out.
I think that those would be interesting variables to look at and dig deeper into. There is a question about, is there a physician that you consider your primary doctor, I believe, as well as how recently have you seen a doctor for a checkup?
And that would probably, you'd probably find that more people know if they have prediabetes.
When they're seeing their physicians more regularly. Yeah. Yes?
This is more of a comment than a question. I think when we use BRFSS data about prediabetes, we should really be careful. It's really not measure the burden, it's measure the awareness.
Right.
For example, when you look at your Hispanic population, although they are having lower prevalence, it's maybe because they have lower awareness rather than
Definitely, and that could be due to lower access, looking at some of the variables that were just mentioned, but also it could be interaction with physicians. If language is a barrier, physicians may be serving those populations might not be as likely to communicate those results. I think there's a lot of different things that go into it, but I agree with you completely that this is really a measure of awareness and not really a measure of the burden of the disease itself. Yeah?
You meant the DPPs on there as well.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you looked at anything with participation rates with the DPPs as far as do they match up with where you see prediabetes?
So we haven't looked at that yet. At this point, we only have data for participation statewide. CDC's been able to give us that on an annual basis, just what our total numbers are. And what we've been told is we would have to work with those. I think we have 40-some pending certification programs in Florida that we'd have to get in touch with each one of them to get a better assessment of actual participation in the programs. But I think that would be an interesting thing to look at. Yeah, so are you reaching out one by one? We have one that's already accredited, and the rest are all pending recognition. So I think that might be something. We've through our 1305 efforts, we've contracted with the American Diabetes Association in Florida to establish what we're calling a lifestyle change hub. And they're really serving as a resource for all the lifestyle change prevention programs around the state. They're putting out mini grant fundings for them to increase their referrals from physician strategies to increase referrals, as well as to expand into areas where they need it. But I do think getting that participation data would be a nice addition to this investigation. No more questions? Thank you.